Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Heart Talk with Miss E. We're also excited to be trying a new feature of our program, is doing a pre-recorded session. So the first part of tonight's program is pre-recorded, and I think you'll probably be able to check in with us in the chat room, but we won't be able to do call-ins until the second half of the program. But tonight's program is entitled, Guess What I Did Last Summer? And we're coming to, well, we have actually come to the end of the summer. We're now officially in the fall season, and there are a lot of activities that take place during the summer for some people, but unfortunately for some of our youth, they don't have the opportunity to be able to give a lot of experience and to share what they've done during the summer. And I remember when we would start the first day of school, you know, the first thing they would say, you know, well, what did you do last summer? Tell us about your summer. And realizing that for a lot of kids, that could probably be a very difficult and perhaps even painful topic to discuss, especially for foster youth. My experience has been that a lot of times foster families, if they do go on vacation, they leave the kids back in respite care or, you know, just do something without them. And a lot of our young people don't really get to, have not had a chance to go places. And we're going to actually speak to two people tonight, one who began her travels as a young adult, and another during the live chat of this, who had the privilege of being able to travel as a foster youth. But our message tonight is that no matter where you are at this point in your life and where you've been, that you can still live your dream. And it's not too late to start having a dream. Some people say, you know, I would never even dream of that. But I think most of us have some type of thoughts about being in some, if not far away place, being in a different place. So tonight we welcome to you a return guest of ours who promised that she was going to come back, Miss Nicole Markman. Are you there, Nicole?
I am.
Good, good. I'm hoping that we will pick up both sounds clearly. But I know when we spoke several months back, you were about to prepare for an internship out of the country.
Yes, ma'am, I was. I was getting ready to go to Czech Republic, the capital of Prague.
Wow. And in my words, I'm just learning how, tonight was the first night that I learned how to say it correctly. I was saying Prague, and you said, well, as in America, we pronounce it Prague, but there in Czechoslovakia, they pronounce it how?
Praha.
Praha. Okay, so like our Baja.
Correct.
You were in Prague, Praha, Czechoslovakia. Before
That's
we
right.
talk about that trip, tell us a little bit about how your childhood and adolescence was. We know that you went into foster care for the second time at the age of 11.
Yes, I was... placed into foster care, sadly, from infancy till 5 years old. The state returned me home because apparently my parents fulfilled the trainings and obligations that they had to do. But it was a mistake, I believe, because from age 6 to until I left again at age 11, as we discussed, I had to deal with a lot of sexual abuse, ongoing, and physical abuse. So you can well imagine at the age of 11, when I was taken away, I felt, you know, safe, and I felt that I could actually breathe, because just imagine having to go home every day worrying how you were going to be beat or punished. So part of my childhood, I believe, growing up, I hated it, as you could well imagine, and I just never thought that I would have the opportunity to dream dreams or allow them to come true.
Wow. So we talked a little bit about the extent of your travels as a child or as an adolescent. Did you ever travel with your biological family?
I did not. I think my traveling with my biological family went as far maybe as my imagination, to allow me to escape the pain and everything that I was going through, to allow me to be in this imagination world of, you know, traveling the Bahamas or even if it was Disneyland, you know, because you got to escape, you know, the pain and the suffering, and you got to place your mind in a peaceful, more happy environment. And to me, that was my traveling.
Okay. And today, we encourage that and call that visualization. During our childhood years and maybe before, and perhaps even still, people will say, you know, well, you know, you're in dreamland. You let your imagination get away from you. But there's a quote by Einstein, and I will have to look that up, but it says something to the effect that imagination is really the true sign of genius, because that's where the thoughts and the ideas come from. And we know that every action starts with a thought in our mind, and we encourage, and that's what this program is about, encouraging people to be able to visualize. I know Ms. Shay Oliveria has an organization called Bigger Than Your Block, and we want to encourage our young people and old alike to realize that there is more to what just meets the eye of what we see every day, and there are many places that we can go, and we deserve to be able to go there, and that it is possible. Tell us about where you got the pictures or in your mind to be able to go to these imaginary places. Where did they come from?
I think it came from maybe books being read to me by my babysitter, from school, or when I would always go and spend time with my cousins at my aunts and uncles.
Now, did your cousins live far away, or was it just...
No, they lived close by.
Okay, but was it just a different environment that would cause you to be able to conjure up these pictures?
I think it was more of spending time with them and reading these books. My mind just went from a painful, shattering young, you know, little girl to, wow, that's so beautiful, and I wish that I lived there instead of, you know, living here. And I think they just started rattling in my head, and it's just stuck.
Love it. I love it. And so that's where it began. And so whether it starts off as an escape mechanism, you know, as a way of coping, or is it just a place of, you know, we use it for bringing, for biofeedback, bringing down our blood pressure, calming ourselves down, and just coming to a place of wholeness. So that was a place that made you feel good. And so
yes.
Your most favorite place to go as a child in your mind was where?
I would say Disneyland, because I never went as a child. I didn't go to Disneyland until I was 13 years old, and that was when I was in foster care.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say my first dream that came true through my, you know, my imagination was Disneyland, because I remember the books and my cousins, when they've gone, my parents didn't allow me to go, but I would see pictures and see how much fun they had and just their smiles and the rides that they went on. And I always wondered, wow, I would love to have that happiness. I would love to have that fun, because my childhood, I didn't know what fun was, because we weren't allowed to have fun.
Wow. So I'm hearing two very important things. One that is really way there at the top of the list is the reading, being able to read and be read, too. And interestingly enough, our Foster Pride celebration this year was based upon fostering pride through literacy. And so that goes to let us know that reading is more than fundamental. Reading is life building. And
it is.
Reading is dream building. So for our listeners out there, that even if you don't like to read, that is another way of having a place to go, to be able to develop pictures in your mind. And I know a lot of times books are illustrated and sometimes they're not. And some ways I like the ones that are not illustrated. It's like when you have a book that's made into a movie. You ever see the movie and sometimes the movie isn't their visuals are not as they don't match the ones that you had in your mind when you were reading the book. Yeah. And
yes.
So but what my statement is that they are dreams, and the experience exceeds the dreams, and
sure,
that they are possible. So I know we talked before, and so beyond Disneyland, I know you said that in your mind it was, you know, I guess someplace like the Bahamas. You didn't know what the Bahamas were, but you knew it was a place that was sunshiny and had, I guess, beaches and
happy and just enjoying the breeze.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yes. So when
and
you
family
did,
having a good time.
Yes, just having a good time. So when you went on you went to Disneyland. Now, was it Disneyland or Disney World? Because you're in Florida, right?
I'm in Florida, correct.
Okay, so did you go to Disneyland or Disney World?
Well, I called it Disneyland, but it's actually Disney World.
Yeah, because, you know, we just have the little coast-to-coast thing going on. Because I know
definitely
here it was Disneyland, and then when Disney World came about, it's like, oh, now I'm going to go to Disney World, too.
Yeah.
So you got to go to Disney World, or your Disneyland. You got to go to your dream place as an adolescent.
Correct.
And what was that like for you?
I didn't know how to act. I kind of use the illustration, you know, when you go into a candy store and you see candy everywhere, and you can get one of those little bags and you can just start filling candy up. And so as a little child, you probably go to each and every jar because you like how the candy looks. Well, that's kind of how I felt when I went to Disney World / Disneyland, because my eyes grew so big. I was like, oh, I want to go on that, I want to go on that, I want to go on that. And if I had my way and I went on everything, we would have probably been there from sun up to sundown.
Well, that's easy to do anyway. You might have been there for a few days, actually.
Yes.
A full day there.
Yes.
Right. So that was exhilarating. And then you mentioned your first trip out of the state.
Yes, to New Mexico with a foster parent.
Okay. And what was that experience like for you?
That experience, I think, what I can vaguely remember is just not allowing the fear to overtake me, you know, from leaving and, you know, going to a unknown, you know, area out of the state. I think I was so happy because I was leaving out of the state. And to me, it was like I was leaving all of my pain behind.
Mm-hmm. So that with the anticipation of being there, and I think that is something that's very realistic, that it can be exciting and scary all at the same time.
Correct. That is true.
Unknown. And what is it that grounded you and gave you the security and feeling safe?
I think it was because my foster mom and I went because her daughter was getting married and there were other kids there. So I got to play with the other kids and we just went to different activities, and I think it took away my being scared or being afraid and just now acting like a normal child and having fun.
Mhm. Mhm. So when you got there, was it anything like you had anticipated?
No, because I really didn't know what to anticipate. I was just excited.
Okay, so but it was a positive experience for you.
It was, yes.
Okay. So you go through adolescence, you become an adult. What other types of dreams or just adventures were you able to take along the way?
When I was, before I had became married to my ex-husband, we had many opportunities to just travel. We went to North Carolina, we've gone to Georgia, we've gone to Tennessee just to go on train excursions.
Mm-hmm.
So that was a lot of fun, and that's how I was introduced in my early adulthood of traveling to different states. And we always drove. We never took an airplane. So it was one of those enjoy scenery and sit back. So it was really lovely. And it even got to the point where we ended up, after every summer tradition of going to North Carolina to the Great Smoky Mountains Railroad, we loved it. We loved the scenery. It was so peaceful that we decided to end up moving there. So after obtaining custody of my twin sisters, we moved to North Carolina. And so, of course, that was amazing. And I never would have dreamed of that happening. So it was spontaneous, I must say. But then I was sad when we had to move back to Florida, because there was no longer those mountains or, you know, sitting out by the water, listening to the creeks and things like that.
Right. You know, I've heard someone say that just like there's a such thing as timing for us to do certain things in life, that there are places that we tend to grow more in, that we really come alive in. And I believe that. I think certain environments have a certain effect on many of us. And
yes,
when you get there, you know it. It's like
mm-hmm.
finding your own little zone and being mm-hmm. able to just grow.
Yes.
That's not the word I'm looking for. The word won't come at the moment. So that was all an opportunity. And then when you and your husband divorced, one of the things he told you was that you wouldn't be able to do this anymore.
Yes, he told me, once you leave me, you can kiss traveling goodbye. And I actually believed it for a little while, for the, you know, couple of months after the divorce. And I think depression at some point, you know, tried to seep in. And I was like, oh, my gosh, I'll never get to travel again. And, you know, I was like, oh, I guess I can kiss traveling goodbye because now I don't have him to be able to travel anymore, and I can't do that by myself. But that was all ha-ha-ha because in my face, as well as in his, because God showed me that I didn't need him to be able to fulfill my dreams.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So I think one of the, well, I don't know if it was the first, because I've only known you for probably, what, a year and a half now, that
yes.
when I first met you, well, we haven't met face-to-face, but when I first came to know you, you were on your way to serve an internship in Washington, D.C.
Yes.
Yeah, with the Finance Senate Committee.
Finance Committee, yes, ma'am.
Yeah, so, I mean, was that a dream or beyond your expectations?
Beyond my expectations. I didn't know that, you know, sometimes people say, wow, I would have never thought that that would happen to me.
Mm-hmm.
I said that.
Okay.
Yes. Because it changed. It changed my perception, my personality, my thoughts, the way I thought of things, think of things, and just I think my whole behavior. It basically changed me inside and out. If you know, you ask me.
Mm-hmm. In what ways?
I would have to say before I went to Washington, D.C., I wasn't as confident as I am now, or after, you know, the internship. I became more familiar of the power of my voice, whereas before I went to Washington, D.C., I would question how would my words or me advocating would change anything. So self-doubting, confidence, and just knowing that, you know, going to Washington, D.C. and having to advocate for the thousands of children that are in foster care system in Florida alone, that's a lot of responsibility. And I would have never thought that that huge responsibility would have been placed on me. And when I went to the internship and my 6 weeks turned into almost a year, it really gave me the message of what you have to say does matter and you can make a big impact, even to the point that it will blow your mind. And that's what it did.
Yeah, and it blew your mind all the way into another experience.
Yes, it did. Last summer, boy, these summers have gone really fast.
So you thought you were in D.C., the capital of the United States of America, and you didn't want to leave there?
No, I did not. I didn't, but... I was told, you know, it's time for me to come back home, which is St. Petersburg, Florida, because I needed to position myself mentally, spiritually, and physically to get ready for the life-changing experience of Praha, Czech Republic. When I was in Washington, D.C., I was navigating on, at that time I was starting my social work program at Florida State University in my master's, and I was really discouraged when they told me that I could not complete my field placement internship in D.C., which is the motherboard of child advocacy, and they told me that I would have to either come back home or go to Montana, Alabama, Georgia or Mississippi to complete my field placement, and I wasn't interested in doing so. So the type of person that I am, like to research, I started just playing around on the FSU website, social work website, and I came across the international field placements where you basically can complete your field practicum for graduation in a different country.
Wow.
And
what was your thought when you saw that?
When I saw that, I think my first thought was, wow, this would be scary but fun.
A little bit like going to New Mexico, huh?
Yes, yes.
On another level.
On a different level, a more extreme level. Yes. And that was how actually Czech Republic came into play, because I emailed the director to inquire about, finding out more about the process of completing my field placement and Trinidad, which was where my eyes sought after. And the reason why my eyes sought on and gravitated to Trinidad Tobago was because they have a Saint Monica's Children's Home there. And I think my greater passion is working with kids, and that was a good fit for me. It was a great fit for me.
Okay. There was a click before that. You said your greatest passion was?
Oh, my greatest passion is working with children.
Okay.
Who are in foster care or orphanages in different countries. And so when I saw that listed under the choices of international field placement, my heart sought out for that field placement. So I was like, okay, that's mine. I'm grabbing it and I'm not letting go. And I ended up emailing to inquire to the field director. And it just so happened I was traveling on the metro from Washington to Virginia to go home that evening. And I said, okay, God, if you want me to go to Trinidad, you know I've never traveled out of the country. So, and my field placement is 3.5 months. So that means you have to send me somewhere else so I can get a taste of what it feels like to travel out of the country.
Mm-hmm.
And the next day I came into work and my email before me, I open, and this field director says, I teach this class. Attached is a flyer. Please let me know if you're interested. And long and behold, I opened, and it said Prague, which is how we say it in America. And I said, where the heck is Prague? You know, where is your geography when you need it, right?
Okay.
So I'm reading it, and I said, oh, my gosh, they have a child welfare component. I would love that. And it said that we were also visiting an orphanage. So I emailed her, and I told her I was interested, and she gave me all the information that I needed. And I ended up, you know, applying for the program, and I got accepted.
Wow. And over what period of time did this all take place and just your seeing it, applying, and being accepted?
I would say less than a month.
Wow. That's fast.
Yes.
So fast forward, you left when going there?
I'm sorry, say that again.
Going fast forward, when did you leave to go to Praha?
Oh, okay. I left to go to Praha, which is how Czech Republic says it, last summer, June 4th, I left of last year, of this year, actually, yes.
So what was that experience like? What stood out to you the most? What happened when you got there? What was different? What was unexpected?
I would have to say what stood out the most were the people. The people were really interesting. And the reason why I say that is because Czech Republic is one of the countries in the Europe hemisphere that experienced communism.
Mm-hmm.
And the older generation, if you observe the people while, you know, we went on subways, while we went to events, while we rode the bus to get to our class, they go on the escalator, they just look so empty inside. It was just like they just got up to go about their day, and that's it. There's no facial appearance, you know, of happiness or anything like that. It's just bleak, you know. And that really that stood out to me the most. And I wondered why. And as we stayed there, I was there for a month, so I didn't come back to the States until July. And the program was for 6 weeks. So I think when looking at these individuals and learning more about their history and the communism aspect of everything, it made me understand that they haven't gotten over their history, over the pain that they had to endure. And then especially when they see outsiders, whether it's gypsies, whether it's Germans, whether it's Jews, whether it's Americans, it's like they put a wall between themselves and you, because they don't know or they don't want to trust you, because they don't know if you're going to hurt them like they've been hurt in the past.
Mm. Okay. I'm going to come back to that because I see a potential parallel there. So when you got to where the children were, I saw some of your pictures, and we'll post some of those on our page. You got to do sightseeing, and finally you got to go to an orphanage.
Yes, I did.
And what was that experience?
I would have to say the experience was more of a setup where it really hurt. It really broke my heart because the foster care system there is totally different from the U.S. And when I say it's different, I mean our children who are placed, or, you know, myself and other foster alumni, we were placed in foster homes, and the last resort, if they didn't find, you know, another home for you, they would put you in a group home. Mm-hmm. Where there, any child that enters the child welfare system, they automatically institutionalize them in a residential setting. Because foster parents are new to them, and because social work is also new to them, the social workers often try to discourage people from becoming a foster parent so that they don't have to deal with extra paperwork. Because here, social workers, you know, we have anywhere from 20 to 35 cases. Whereas in Czech Republic, they have 100 cases.
Wow. So,
and also,
living conditions, you were saying, you know, it was more of like an institutional residence.
Like our group home, for example. Like our group homes, here you have a big building, you know, and you put all the kids in. Our group homes, we have what? We have maybe anywhere from 6 to 12. You know, not a high secure, you know, residential facility, right? But then you have your residential facilities that are high secure, and you may have up to 100 to 200 children. Well, in Czech Republic, all of their like palaces or buildings that they used to use during, you know, the old era, they use those buildings now to put kids in. It's kind of like, When I heard this, and when we had lectures in class, my mind automatically went to, you're warehousing these kids.
So approximately how many children would be in one building? How was it set up? Were the rooms partitioned? You know, just what was the material of the flooring or the walls like? I'm trying to get a feel.
Well, because they're different per each facility. So the facility that I experienced, it was like a home setting. So it wasn't something like when you go in and you're expecting there's no carpeting or there's holes in the walls or anything like that. The facility itself that we entered was a nice facility. However,
how many children?
There were 60 children.
60, okay.
Yes.
And so the sleeping quarters were, how was that set up?
The sleeping quarters were sectioned off, different rooms like you would have in a home. And you would have where there might be 2 to 3 children per room. So they would have bunk beds or single beds if the kids are older. They even separated the kids by age groups.
Okay.
And then you had your older adults, kind of like villages, where they would assign a what they called a parent, even though it was not their parent, into each living quarter.
Okay. And this is really hard for me to conceptualize because you say it's like a regular home, but then you say there are 60 people. To me, it's hard to see 60 people in
a home. It's a big home. It's a two-story home. Then they have an outside home at the back of it, kind of like if you think about like a garage like we would do here, then we could set that up like another room.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they had another home that was attached to this building, and they would use that for the older kids. So the two-story home was all of the little kids.
Wow. So what was the affect of the children? You talked about the bleakness and the just sort of...
These particular kids, you had some that they would hide their faces from us. You had some that were just in awe because Americans were there. There was even a little girl who wore a shirt that said, "I love America."
Mm.
So, and then we had one girl that was running around us because it seemed like she was excited that we were there. You had some that looked angry. You had some that were just being like teenagers laughing and giggling. They were probably talking about us in their own language.
Speaking of language, what was the communication like for you there, being in a place where there was a totally different language?
We had to have an interpreter every on-site visit we went to, visited at. We got to visit, like I said, the orphanage. So the translator, if we had questions, or the translator or the director was telling us about the program, she would have to translate that to us. So that was really interesting, but frustrating at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
And then also we went to a domestic violence shelter, and we went to an AIDS prevention clinic. We also went to a human trafficking program center. So all of those different experiences, we had to have a translator because none of them spoke English.
Wow.
And I was actually supposed to work at the orphanage during my free time, but unfortunately they wanted me to they're teaching the children English on Tuesdays, but I had class on Tuesdays, so I couldn't do it.
Wow. So when you walked away from the orphanages, what... I guess, did your perspective of foster care in the United States change? And I know in your long-term goal is to be involved in international social work, social welfare. What did
Yes.
you walk away with as your goal, your vision, your purpose, and how did your perception of the American foster care system, how was that affected?
The first part of the question, as far as my goals and purpose of being an international social worker, it just made it burn even deeper within me that this is definitely what I feel that my purpose is to be. And when I say my purpose, I mean I would like to run and organize a international/domestic Miracle Haven children's home. And what I would like to do is provide a children's section to the home. So not only kids who are abandoned, not only kids who suffer through domestic violence, but even kids who may be ran from out of their home due to some catastrophic event that happened in another country, they would be able to come and live at my facility. And what I would want to offer is a cultural experience to that children's home, because a lot of kids, even myself growing up in foster care, you're not made aware of the different cultures that are around you. So when we get older, we're not as knowledgeable as we should be. We are not made aware of the different opportunities, like we're discussing on this show, of what it's like to be in another country or what it's like to eat certain foods. And I feel that that would provide an awesome part of my program. And I would also provide housing for older youth to transition them into independent living, starting from pre to post, and also providing a after care services as well. I feel that that would be necessary. I would also feel that adoption piece of that would be on legislation. Having more countries come together to provide adoption to these children, because I feel, especially with the children that I saw in Czech Republic, when they turn 18, they have nowhere to go. At least here, we have some type of aftercare services, whether that's independent living, giving tuition reimbursement, giving room and board every month to help with our apartments or our bills. They don't have those things to look forward to.
Okay. And so, and I would guess that is in one way how your perception of our system has changed, because there's still so much that's not happening here in the United States for our transitioning foster youth. And
right.
So how did that affect your perception of what goes on here?
That my perception then became a worldwide vision that even though we aren't where we should be, we have more than some countries have. And I feel that across the globe, someone needs to step up and advocate for changes not only here but in other countries, because our youth, no matter where they're positioned, whether it's in the U.S. or in another country, they still deserve the same resources. They weren't asked to be put in foster care. Or these children in Czech Republic or Trinidad weren't asked to be, you know, become an orphan.
Right, and they weren't asked to be born in a certain geographical location.
Exactly, correct. And so that means...
There are a couple of things that you've said that have really... triggered a reaction in me, and I think one is the fact that we're talking about international, and when you first mentioned that to me last year, I was saying, you know, how exciting it was to me, because before I traveled to the United Kingdom, it never really occurred to me, well, actually prior to that, when I was a part of a listserv, it never occurred to me that there were foster care systems in other countries. And then when I went to the UK and I spoke in London, and, of course, my message is always on the children in the village, and I talked about foster care, I had several former foster youth to come up to me. I had a couple of foster parents and a social worker to come to speak to me afterwards. And it's like, wow. And so the stories, the emotions, the experiences, you know, were very, very similar, so they could relate to what was being said. The other thing that you commented on, you know, was the whole issue of culture. And I look at how other countries know more about the United States a lot of times than we know about the United States, but we know very little about other countries. And it's
right.
almost like, you know, we think we are the center of the world.
Right. And we're
not. Yeah, we are the world. And that the children who are growing up in other places do deserve to have the same thing as we do. And for some reason, you know, we keep wanting to bring kids to America and not even treating our own children with any better.
Our own kids, right?
Pardon me?
And not treating our own kids any better.
Exactly. But it's a global thing. And one of the questions I'd asked you was about just even were there any people of African descent there? Because
I would say there was maybe two handfuls of African descent out of the whole population.
Wow, wow. And
a matter of fact, they also, what really got under my skin was that they love black people there, but they discriminate against gypsies.
Interesting. So it's another form or another side of racism.
Discrimination, racism, yes.
Wow.
So in their foster care system and in their orphanages, Roma children, gypsies, make up at least the majority of the orphanages.
That's interesting. So when you're talking about, the majority of children that are in care there, you talked about just the guardedness of the society in general.
Yes.
Do you see the parallel between, any parallels between there and here in the States?
Yes. I think one of the parallels that stood out the most to me was the trust issue.
Mm-hmm.
Because when people that are not U.S. citizens and we see other people from countries come here, we automatically put our guard up or we want to try to find something to blame them, to discriminate against them. Where in Czech Republic, you know, people saw American or outsiders, they do the same thing.
Wow. So that says that we are very similar internally.
Yes.
Based on how we perceive the world, our behaviors are based on how we perceive the world around us.
Yes.
So I think if anything that I've gotten from my discussion with you that I would hope that we can be able to spread to our listening audience is that, you know, it just goes back to the song, we are the world. And the fact that we have many similarities, different experiences, and there's a basic human nature about us that we all desire to have care and to be understood, to be cared for. And I think our defenses, when we understand ourselves, we can start to understand other people differently.
That is correct.
I'm so excited about your vision that you have, and I've, you know, follow a lot of your posts, you know, through the Facebook pages, and I realize that you have the vision, and it's our vision and our passion that causes us to stand up in the midst of lots of challenges and obstacles. And I know that with everything, you still move forward because you still can encounter challenges, but you still keep moving.
Yes.
I just want you to know I am very proud of you. You're an inspiration to me, and I look forward to our being able to love and care and minister to children throughout the world, because even though I have some years on you, I think I'll be following you.
Well, I'm glad to hear that.
Pardon me?
I said I'm very blessed to hear that.
Yes, indeed. So I will be looking forward to hearing about your trip from Trinidad. We're going to catch you in another few months. And when will you be leaving for Trinidad?
I leave December 21st, so I'll be spending Christmas there.
Wow. And you'll be there for how long?
For 3.5 months.
Oh, wow.
Yes.
So you, that'll be quite interesting. Well,
yes,
I'll try to see if I can find an island, something near Trinidad, because my birthday is in March, and I want to head that direction, so maybe I can meet up with
that
you there.
That would be awesome. Hey, Barbados.
Oh, yes, that sounds real good to me. So,
yes.
And we're talking about having a dream, having a vision. And as I stated to you before this conversation, that, you know, the scripture says he's able to do exceedingly abundantly and above what you can think or imagine. And I just returned from an island in the Caribbean that at the beginning of this year I never heard of and never knew existed. Therefore, I could not have imagined it. So
yes.
I believe, God, that all things are possible. And
that
we, you know, wish you the best. You're in our prayers.
Thank
we give
so
you
much.
Support. And Four Child's Heart is going to try to do something just to let you represent us there while you're away.
Well, thank you, Miss E.
Ooh. And so this is the end of our pre-recorded broadcast, and we're going to pick up with the live portion of that to have some discussion around my interview with Miss Nicole Markman, and we will have another guest to talk about their travels and seeing the world. And the other thing I wanted to mention, for you to be able to share this experience with us, do you have any memory of when you went to Disneyland and you went to New Mexico about going back to school or sharing with your friends that you had traveled?
No, I have not.
Okay. But I think that's something, it gives us a sense of not only confidence, but of pride to be able to say, you know, this is what I've done. So that's why I entitled this program, Guess What I Did Last Summer. You know, what is the movie say? I Know What You Did Last Summer?
Last Summer, yes.
So,
good title.
No, you don't. You have to guess. Let me tell you what I did last summer. So we're looking forward to hearing what you're going to be doing this Christmas. That's going to be another headline. So
yes, it
you.
Will be.
Yes, yes. So thank you so much for sharing. Thank you for being a blessing to the children before you, that are going to be before you, that you're coming, they're coming behind you, and for being one of the children who has been touched by someone to allow you to live your dream. So we look forward to keeping in touch.
Oh, thank you so much, and it was my pleasure.
Okay,
thank
you.
Keep doing what you do.
Thank you. I appreciate it. God bless.
God bless.
Heavenly Mother's crying, these children are dying at the hands of the other child. I know her heart is breaking, feel the earth is shaking, but rivers flow from the tears she cries. She cries, she cries, she wrinkles. Mother's crying, these children are dying.